Passiert nicht allzu häufig, dass Troy Ward, Cheftrainer der Levi's Blackwings Linz, seine Bürotüren öffnet. Für die Servus Hockey Night hat er das natürlich getan. Und da nehmen wir auch gleich diese Gelegenheit wahr, um mit ihm ein bisschen über die Saison und noch viel mehr zu plaudern. Coach Ward, thanks first of all for having us. How much of that introduction did you understand? How's your German coming along?
My German has come along pretty good. I think you speak very fluent German. That's what I just learned in that introduction. I'm not as fluent as you, but it is coming along. So I'm happy to say that I think people I've met in the city and for sure the players, like I always try and say something in German in a positive at the end of every pregame speech to what I want us to do. And then I don't translate it in English. So then my English guys got to ask the Austrians, like, what did he just say? And so I always speak German to my team in the pregame speech.
Now, I figure it's an interesting preposition. You having your very first like European gig, your very first European job with the Blackwings. How has that process of acclimatization gone for you?
Well, it's gone well. You know, I think it's been, in general, you know, I use it a lot, but I think it's been Ruhig. You know, it's been really calm. It's been, I've got great teachers here in Linz, teachers like Christian, my general manager, Mark Zooks, and Jürgen Penker as assistant coaches. Phil Lucas has joined our staff this year on the training side. I think Peter Franschlag is our president, has made the whole transition easier. Our off-ice people here, whether you talk about Judith, our secretary, or Martin, our PR guy and media guy type guy. These guys have been tremendous teachers to me, both in my sport, of which is hockey, obviously, and helping me guide myself through the city and through the town and the league, and then just off-ice as well. So you need the off-ice as much as you need the on-ice, because I think you have to feel comfortable in what you're doing and how you get about the city in order to be a good coach. So everybody's been very helpful.
Now, the Blackwings have like really gotten a firm grasp on the top six again. The season didn't really start, I guess, to your taste. Lead me through the season so far and your impressions.
Well, I would say, you know, it's the amusement park ride would be a roller coaster. We've talked about it. We've had some ups and we've had some downs, and it's been a constant little bit of a swing of that throughout the year. I think there's been some things behind the scenes that have caused that. Some, you know, if you want to call it ripples in the water a little bit versus being, you know, very calm. It's just been kind of an up and down season, a little bit based on things we control, things we don't control. But inevitably, I think that we saw ourselves through those rough water times, and we've stayed very much on the process-driven, everyday approach here. I don't think any time, Martin, at one particular time was our team too high or team too low. We're just process-driven here. Like, we just stay with it every day, and we know that in the end, if all the teaching's done right, that when we get healthy or when certain things get themselves in the right position, we'll be successful, and that's kind of been our approach.
We have to back it up a little, because obviously the offseason brought the retirement of two club legends. You lost a lot of experience. Was that something you tried to make up in the offseason with the veterans you acquired?
Yeah, I think for the most part, yes. I think one of the things that most people out there still don't know about this year's team and maybe the difficulties we've just spoken to has been our leadership. And that's no disrespect to Brian Lebler as our captain. But as we know in the history of hockey, or at least I know, but I don't know if everybody knows, but when you take your leading goal scorer and you make him into a captain, that's usually forbidden in the game of hockey. A lot of teams don't want to do that because goal scorers are a special entity and they like to think a certain way. Well, I think we saw parts of that really clear this year. I think if you look at Brian Lebler's start and you look at our team's start, they coincide with not great. And Brian, because he's a quality man and a quality player in this league, took a lot on his shoulders and tried to be what took Phil years to build. And I told Brian many times, you will be the next Phil in this franchise and certainly in this league and in this city. But you're going to have to back off and just go back to being Brian the hockey player and trust your surroundings and trust the other guys that are on the leadership group with you to take over, and you just do what you do best. And finally, when we hit our path, or we want to say we hit our little bit of a streak there, Lebler started to score, and he kind of let the captaincy just kind of roll back a little bit. We did leadership here more by committee instead of him putting all the weight on his shoulders. So I think that's the one big thing here where, you know, people can say whatever they want to say about our team and our season, but one of the hardest things for us to get through that has caused us some problems is the change in leadership here. That's been a big thing. Now, that's a credit to Phil Lucas, okay? But it's also a credit to Brian, who's had to forge through this difficulty and lead us into the future. And we're very comfortable that Brian will be not only a tremendous leader today, but into the future. But it's really taken a long time for it to come together here.
Now, among other things, the injury bug kind of really has hit the Black Wings. Is that something fluky, or what's the reason for that?
Well, a little bit of fluky, a little bit of, you know, you always look at protocol. You know, every place you coach as a coach, you always got to go back to protocol and how does this doctor and how does your physical therapist, your athletic trainer do things, and how do we manage injuries? I mean, the benefit we've had this year is we've had Phil here to kind of get some guys through rehab and actually get them on the ice quicker, where last year we didn't have that piece of the puzzle here in Phil. So, you know, that's helped us, but we've kind of been through, you know, in my 2 years here, we've played shorthanded a few times. But shorthanded to what degree? You have to look at injuries also in the positive light, in the fact that we've had been able to play some U-20 players and some players that we have in Zalem Z, and we bring them back and we play them, and Zalem Z is kind of our farm team, if you would. So the injuries are never good in this league when you only play 44 games in a tight schedule, because, you know, you could be out for 2 weeks and that's 4 to 5 games easily, depending on the time of year, 6 games. So you want to avoid them, but the other side of it is we've been able to play some younger kids and at least get them in. I think the big thing always in Austrian hockey right now is what is development. You know, it's just dressing and playing 4 shifts, enough development. People oftentimes here don't see that as development. I do. It's like, you know, I always say, you know, how do you eat an elephant? Just one bite at a time. Like, you know, so you just give the kids more and more and more and more and more and more. So the injuries have also produced a good thing for the Linz Black Wings. We've gotten some young kids into some games that may never have gotten into games. So we look at it both, you know, as a positive and as it could be a negative.
Speaking of good things, our live broadcast on Sunday brings us finally to Linz. It took until the end of December to finally come to your house. It's going to be an interesting game with the Graz 99ers, who have been at the very top or near the top of the standings. You've played them tight. Actually, you've won the last game here in Linz. What's Sunday going to bring?
Well, I think it'll be a little bit of a mark as to, you know, the first two games. We went into their building and, you know, we laid an egg. I mean, literally an egg. We got 0 goals. And they got 4. So we didn't play very well in that game. We had realized that. That was kind of like we talked about a roller coaster season. We weren't going great at that particular time. Then they came in here and we played pretty well against them. We nullified a lot of things that were their strengths in game one. So, you know, now it's punch, counterpunch, and now we're back to punch, counterpunch again. So we're going to see, you know, where they're at, obviously, and where we're at. But we know in this league that anybody can beat anybody on any given night. It doesn't matter who you play. And we realize that we feel comfortable here at home, but yet we have a tremendous amount of respect for Graz and the things that they bring to the table. And, you know, they've done a nice job compared to where they were a year ago, and they're having a good season. And but that's the great thing. That's the thing you embrace, because you want to get points in this league, in any league you're in, but you want to always beat teams at their best. Like, that makes you feel really special. When you're a professional coach or an athlete, you want to play their best. So we're looking forward to getting their best, and we're looking forward to bringing our best.
Now, you told me earlier today that you got up at 3 a.m. doing video, preparing, like, the stats. What does it take to really get through such long days as a coach? Is there anything you have to bring to the table to be able to endure that wear and tear as a coach?
Basically, a lot of sunflower seeds and a lot of Coke. basically, that kind of keeps me going. A few Milka chocolate bars along the way. No, in general, I mean, I love what I do, and so it's never work. It's similar to everybody that's listening to this cast, or even yourself. You get up and travel a long time to get here today by way of train, but you love what you do. You have a passion for it. You're good at it. I'd like to say that I'm a decent coach at what I do, and I don't really see it as work. It's a passion. So a cup of coffee this morning, get going on some things earlier, and it allows me to see things cleaner. There are other coaches who maybe work the same amount of hours, they just choose different times. My times are, I'm just an early morning guy, and I love the peace and quiet.
Now, your approach to stats and how you prepare them is very unique, and something our league hasn't really seen in that depth. Would you mind to elaborate a little bit on your stats approach?
Well, I think numbers drive our world. It doesn't matter what part of the world you live in, numbers drive our world. So I'm a numbers guy, and I look at the game as it's a math game. You know, it's either 4-on-5 or it's 5-on-4. I don't use the word power play or penalty kill because it's a meaningless word. I mean, are we penalty killing 3-on-5 or 4-on-5 or 4-on-6? Are we on the power play on a 5-on-4 or are we on a power play on a 5-on-3? So to me, it's just math. It's just, so I speak everything in terms of math. And then that's the way our team learns here. So, you know, we speak in terms of, you know, defending a 2-versus-3 or a 3-on-3. We don't, you know, have any other words. We look at it mathematically. So it's easy for me to give the guys stats here. And what I just try and bring to the table that is basically what our numbers are that suit us really well against a particular team or general, like a stretch of our games. And then what is the math that's not trending in our direction, and what are the red flags in what system are they in? And then to go a little bit deeper, you always want to know which of your opponents are giving you fits. You know, so I really take pride in my great assistant coaches here, and Jurgen Penker and Mark Zooks. They both do a tremendous amount of work behind the scenes with the math and the numbers, so we know how we match up against teams and what our best matchups are and why they are what they are. And so, you know, we put a lot of math to things.
How long does it usually take to prepare video and to prepare like all the stats until you know the matchups for an upcoming game?
It takes you a good, you know, the video is a, it doesn't have to be this, it's just that way for our particular staff, but it takes, like, you know, to break down a game, it's 6 to 7 hours of time to sit down and really watch the game in detail and figure that out. And then by the time you do all the stats and put everything together and break down individual video and do all that, it's another 2.5-3 hours. So it's about a 9-hour process to get to all the math situations you want, or get to the video where you want it, where, you know, you've got a guy that's going to come in and watch 6 shifts or 10 shifts or 20 shifts. Corey Locke, he likes to watch all, if I have 48 shifts marked, he'll watch all 48 shifts before every game of his last game. So he's going to come in here and look at every detail as to every time and space he had, where he got his time and space, and things that are causing him problems, and which matchups cause him problems. So guys like that are used to it from me in the past, this is our third tour of duty together, me and Corey, like, he'll come in and watch anywhere from 40 to 50 clips before every game of his last game. And he's very hard on himself as to where his performance is. But it makes sense because he's also one of the better players in the league, at least in getting scoring points in this league. But, you know, so every player is a little bit different, but it takes a process to get it together.
Because you were talking about the numbers game and that everything is math to you, and that you see, like, the numbers game a little different. So if I bring up that your penalty killing sits at a remarkable 88%, that's just a number that you don't work with? Or how do I have to see that?
We don't really deal with the overall number. We deal with it on a day-to-day basis, and we deal with it in what we give up in terms of scoring chances. And we're very strenuous on scoring chances. So we mark our success based on scoring chances. We realize that, you know, we've got a really good league that this is it, and we're playing in. This is a good league, and it's really improved in my 2 years here. So, you know, we realize any team can score on us in the power play. Pretty much all teams have got good enough players to score at any time. And so we really look at it just in terms of minimizing the scoring chances, and then how do we best do that, and then what are the adjustments we make versus each team. So Jurgen Penker heads that up with me. He's the one that does the video to the team. Him and I meet, and he's done a tremendous job of putting us atop the standings in that area. But, you know, he also, it's his thing, and he takes great pride in it. And he's done a good job of creating an atmosphere or a team bond, if you would, in becoming the best.
However, your approach towards stats, advanced stats, that's not the thing that's been going on for like a year or two now. It's basically been the case throughout your career. And I think that's what also got you involved with the Pittsburgh Penguins, hasn't it?
Yeah. We go way back to the beginning. I was fortunate enough to work with Kevin Constantine, who was at the time the Pittsburgh Penguin coach, now coaches in South Korea. But he's been a professional coach and coached over here in Europe most of his whole life. And, you know, we got together way before Pittsburgh and we started to understand the game mathematically. He was been one of my better teachers. And, we always spoke in terms of math. And it's still it's uncommon for most coaches. You know, everybody calls it power play or penalty kill. And we don't ever look at it that way because it doesn't, to me, it never alerts the athlete to what the situation is. But, you know, it started a long time ago. You know, Kevin was actually doing analytics, but we didn't even know the word. I mean, we had 60 to 70 page reports after every game that he would make me tape up like 40 sheets on the wall. And the guys would look at these stats and they were through the roof, and the guys didn't even know what the numbers meant half the time. But Kevin did, so he was a bright guy, but he was also a math teacher. So it all makes sense. Now the NHL and back home, I mean, and most sports today, whatever your sport is, the analytics is a big part of the business, and it's taken a while to get there, but Kevin was just ahead of his time.
Now, you've spent all your life in coaching. You've been a coaching lifer. But when one looks at your career, there's a tiny small gap 2 years ago in there. What happened there for people that don't know?
Took some time off. I just, you chase this business, and you talk about the hours we put in, and then you talk about family, and you talk about, what's most important to you. You get to what's really important to you. It's your family and some things. There was a high risk of me taking a year off from coaching. I couldn't really find the position that I felt was right for me. At the time, I had a European agent, but there was nothing really available, or people didn't know enough about me. I had never coached here. So, as you know, it takes some time to get traction overseas here a little bit. And I was fortunate enough through my agent, and Christian here believed in me enough to give me an opportunity. But while that was going on, I didn't find anything, so I took the year off, and you run a risk of never getting back in. And I worked in a car lot and pushed used cars around and cleaned them and swept them and just did, normal things and put in a good 8-hour day every day. And then I got off of work and I went and helped a high school team, and I just became their skills coach and kept myself on the ice and tried to see the game differently with a bunch of high school kids in Wisconsin. And it was a great, great experience for me. It made me a better, I think, teacher here in Linz. It made me respect life. I think it made me respect all the people out there that are listening that do a regular job every day, and they don't do what I do. And I'm very fortunate to do what I'm doing. But it also, I think, made me better for our players to understand that there's different ways to look at life. And sometimes when you do something every day, you kind of tune out the rest of the world, and I don't think you're as good a teacher to your athletes. And so I've really enjoyed it. I've had great energy, I think, for 2 years. I've had a good work ethic, but I'm working for great people in a great city, so it's easy to come to work. But it definitely helped recharge the battery, if you would, and at the same time, I think, become a better teacher.
Now, you're coming over here to Austria, to a country with a foreign language, your first time in Europe. Lead me through these first couple of days in Austria.
Well, it was good. I mean, the one thing that took me back, Martin, was the first thing was I remember coaching in the NHL, and I was 35 years old, and I get here and I'm 55. It's quite the difference. And I remember, in 1998, the Czech Republic won the gold medal. They beat Russia 1-0. And we had, I think, on Pittsburgh, we had 12 players in that game. Or 10 players or something like that. We had like 6 Czechs and 4 Russians. And I remember what hit me here when I landed here and started to coach was that everybody just speaks German. And, when you're back home in the U.S. and you're coaching the NHL, the expectation is every import speaks English. You never speak any language except English. And that's kind of an unforgotten rule in the game of hockey. No matter where you coach in the world, English is the universal language. So when I first got here, I was like, they don't speak English. And they're not going to start anytime soon. I've got to adapt and I've got to learn German. And, you know, that was my first introduction to German. Like, as much as I had tried to prepare before I got here for 2 months to learn some German, it was really hard because they say if you don't learn a new language by the time you're, I think, 12 years old or something like that, it's really difficult. Well, obviously, I've fallen into that, and it was difficult. But I do respect the fact that I live in a great country right now in Austria and a good city in Linz. I do respect that the language is German. And I've worked really hard to becoming as fluent as I can in a short amount of time. And but it's difficult. What's most difficult is there's enough people here at work every day that will recover some English for me and will basically help me through my day. Where it's really difficult is when you're in the mall or in the parking garage you can't get out of because you don't know where the money was to put the money in the machine to get the tag or to... And then you got six cars behind you beeping. And you're in a Linz Black Wings car and they're going, this dumb import doesn't know what he's doing. So it was pretty hilarious at one point in time. It was so painful at one time, I got to be honest with you. I broke down and cried. I broke down and cried as a 55-year-old man. I really felt bad for the people behind me and just what I was putting them through. I just broke down. I was all by myself. I was just like, wow, what an educational piece this is. And so you grow up real fast here. And you also appreciate the fact that, you know, people are passionate about their country and about where they're from, and you have to adapt.
Passionate is a good keyword because that's what, describes these fans here in Linz, one of the loudest crowds we have in the league, but also one of the crowds that has seen a lot of success. So when things didn't go all too well at the beginning of the season, did you like sense that something was off or that the people weren't necessarily satisfied with the way the team played?
Well, I think for sure. I never sensed it once during a game. I would say the group of people in Linz here that come to the games on a daily basis love the players and love the team. There's not one question about that. I think everybody who will see the game Sunday or watch games through your broadcast before feel it. If you've ever been to a game here, you feel it. So there's not one time walking in or out of this building as a coach have I felt it. I felt it only through people that look at social media. And they would tell me that Facebook isn't being very kind to me right now as a coach because we weren't winning and they think maybe a change is due and things like that. But you don't get angry at that. You actually look at it the other way. When you've coached long enough, you embrace it. You embrace the fact that they want to win. They pay for a ticket. They pay to be entertained. They want good things to happen for their city. And quite frankly, they're telling you that the hockey team is the number one thing in the city. And you really draw a lot of respect for that. And what it does is it just makes you work even that much harder because you don't want to let down the people in the city. You don't want to let down part of the camaraderie and the bond that this city has, not only with the game of hockey, but with themselves. I mean, they all take time out of their precious time and spend money out of their pocket to come here to be entertained. And the last thing you want to do is fail them. So no matter who educated me about the social media and the effects or the newspapers or whatever, it never really bothered me and I didn't really disagree with them. I just made me work that much harder to fix our issues and hopefully get us on the right track.
Now the 7-year anniversary of the last Linz championship is coming up and people have been asking, is this a championship caliber team? What does the coach think?
I think we have all the right people on the bus. I don't believe yet we have the right people in the right seats. But we haven't been able to put the right people in the right seats yet here for a roller coaster start to the season. We've either had injuries, sicknesses. We've had a couple of national team breaks that have kind of messed up with our chemistry a little bit. Fatigue has been a little bit of a factor in terms of some issues here or there. These are all what we would call excuses, but they're not really excuses. I think they're behind the scenes. There's just some things you do every day as a coach, and you realize that, hey, we're not going to be at our best right now, and you got to deal with that. But I'm confident that the group here, once we get everybody going and a longer stretch of healthiness and some continuity with our lineup, like that's been the biggest thing from a year ago. Is we, you know, last year, no matter what time of the year it was, for the most part, you saw 7, 84, and 23. Here comes Lebler, Locke, and Hofer. And you were like, oh. Then the next thing you saw was Broda, Schofield, Da Silva. Oh. But that played itself out almost all year. No real injuries up until the end of the year with 9. Occasional bumper bruise with 88 and 19 and Broda and Da Silva. This year you can't say we've rolled over the boards like that every game. There's been too many hiccups here. So, like I said, I think we have the right people on the bus. We just got to get them in the right seats.
Speaking of championship caliber, Mike Uzas, again, among the top goalies in this league. But people have been getting more vocal in asking, is he a championship caliber goaltender?
Michael is. He's of all the goalies I've ever had in my life, which is a long coaching career, he's right up there. His preparation and his dealing with the process is outstanding. He's a leader in our room. I think he's a leader in preparation, mental, physical, everything you could want out of a professional athlete. He leads us. Does a really nice job. You know, we felt a year ago that at the end of the year that we wanted Michael back, and we gave Michael the chance to see if he wanted to be back, because I was direct with him and said, you know, we're going to bring Kickert in here, and he's going to play a lot, and you're not going to play quite like you did a year ago. And so you're going to have to deal with the season a little bit differently, and I want to know your maturity and your ability to handle that. And he was right from the get-go. He says, sounds good to me. I need a challenge. And I also need to find out more about myself as a goaltender, maybe not playing all the time, and see where I'm at. So he embraced it when we presented it with him. We brought him back because, obviously, I think the Linz Blackwing fans and the ownership were real, and I was excited about what he did last year as our goaltender. And I think he hasn't failed us this year neither. But he's understanding now that sometimes who plays next and how long that particular guy would go, which might be Kicky, or this situation, like he understands he doesn't ultimately control it as much as he did last year. And I think that's still an adjustment for him. But while he's going through that adjustment, because he hasn't been through this in a few seasons, I think he's handled it really well. And I think he's going to be a better goalie and a fresher goalie down the stretch because of this. Even though maybe there could be some inconsistencies, like in terms of his save percentage or his win-loss record, but part of that inconsistency right now falls within the whole team. Doesn't just fall under goaltending. It's just been that type of season for us.
Now, you've mentioned the injuries. You've had long-term injuries. You've had lingering injuries. Is there, or has there ever been a time where you did take a hard look at the market or consider to add a player or two? Or is like the roster set for now?
I would say it's set for now. I think we continue to go through that. We have some lingering injuries, and then you look at, you know, well, are you ever going to get to full speed, and should we bring in somebody else? One of the things that I think trademarks Linz and trademarks our management team and our general manager and our president is they're patient, and they've really created a family atmosphere. And you can see why guys don't want to leave here, because whether you talk about it from Peter Franslags as the president or Christian, they're both patient guys. And they're both going to deal with some injuries long-term, and they'll wait it out to see if they can get that athlete going. And maybe in other organizations, whether it be in this league or the DEL or wherever, maybe they're not as patient. But we're a patient group here, and they've followed suit with that. So we're not on the market for anybody right now. We feel that we have some nicks and bruises we've got to monitor to see if they can get to 100% and be ready at the right time. But it is something, you know, it's always in the back of your mind, and even the players are aware of that. You know, like, we got to make them aware of, like, we need to get you healthy, and what can we do to help you? Because quite frankly, when they're imports and they're 4 points, you got to get a lot. And we've played some too many games with as many as 8 to 10 points out of our lineup, and that's a lot at this level.
Now, the season is really getting into full swing, a very intense part of the season coming up with like holiday hockey where you play every 2 or 3 days. How did you get your guys ready for that? Did you have to specifically do that, or is that like a nice like taste of the players for you guys?
Well, you really look at your days off. You know, we took only 3 days off in the first November Team Austria break. This last one here, we took 4 days off. So when we took 4 days off, we took it off for the health reasons. Like, we really took it off for just to get healthy. And then we played, obviously, Tuesday. Yesterday, we took off again. We've just got to get some guys healthy. And the only, as you mentioned earlier, you know, we have some good seasoned guys that have played in this league, but they're, you know, some guys in their 30s, which you called in a very nice way. They're young, they're late 20s nowadays as we look at them. But we need to be rested, we need to be healthy, and so we're just looking at our days off right now in preparation for this next stretch, and we've tried to address that. And then, you know, we've got to get good ice balance. I mean, we've got to play four lines, and we've got to make sure that we're always at our best.
Gonna conclude the hockey talk part now by asking you, what has to happen for you to say in May it's been a good season?
I think you got to get everybody to play their best. I think you got to get every player to their ceiling at the right time. I think, you know, you try and maintain everybody to their ceiling as much as you can during the year, but you know that's impossible based on personal situations and team situations. But in the end of the year, oftentimes when you get to a contract situation or a player is trusting you that on behalf of his wife and children that you're going to get to be a contract player again, or you've put him in a position where he's had a successful year, whether we put him in a contract situation or somebody else does, that they make the most amount of money they want. And what's successful for me is just that in itself, is getting every player to their ceiling and maintaining that ceiling for as long as we can. And that's what we're working towards right now. We're not there yet. We've had some guys that are having really good years, and we've had some guys so far that haven't been as normal as maybe they have been. But there's still a lot of game left. We're in the game 29 here on Friday, and we've got 44. So we've got a little room here left to get everybody to their ceiling, and that's the most important thing for me to be a successful coach. Obviously, winning goes hand in hand with that, but I don't think winning happens unless you put everybody at their ceiling. I think when you look at Bolzano last year, what they did, you know, probably they got everybody to their ceiling at the right time. And that's what we need to do here. And that's because then you're respected within your community, you're respected within your franchise that you work for, then you're also respected by the players, and you get respect in the game that they peaked at the right time. So that's what we're working towards.
Now, your predecessor, Rob Daum, he coached, worked, and lived here for 6 years, so he was a well-known commodity. You've been here for a year and a half. What's the one thing, or what's the thing a Black Wings fan, a media member, someone in and around Austria wouldn't know about Troy Ward?
Would not know?
Yeah.
Probably just because I'm not from here, family's number one. And, you know, I'm in a spot in my life where I have two boys back home. My wife has two kids back home. My dad is 81. He just visited and never been in Europe the first time a week ago. And seeing my father, you know, haven't seen him since August, now seeing him in December, you know, at 81, he's aged. And the most important thing that people don't know about me is taking care of my family. Oftentimes you travel a lot and you're on a journey constantly as a coach, and you chase that because of it's kind of a, I don't want to use the word drug, but it's a little bit of like a situation where you drink the same Kool-Aid all the time, you get wrapped up in it. Well, as you get older, you also mature, and that, you know, I think there's oftentimes my family would say that family was second throughout my career, but it's really not anymore, and family's number one, and it was a pleasure to have my parents here.
Now, we did start this talk by talking a little bit about your time in Austria. We did touch on one instance that really made you break down, but I want to end this on a positive note. What's a curious, interesting, funny occasion, something that happened in Austria to you in your time with the Black Wings so far?
Oh, there's quite a few of them.
At gunpoint, which one would you pick?
At gunpoint?
Yeah, at gunpoint. You have to give me a story now. Too many to choose from?
There's a lot to choose from. I mean, I don't know if I'm just trying to kind of shock me. I don't know if there's one that would put me into a difficult spot or, you know, was a good or a humorous moment. I found that probably the most difficult, humorous time is Jürgen and Mark are great teachers. And so as I told you, I like to try and speak German to the guys in the locker room. It's one of my last sentences to say, you know, something in German that means let's go or let's have a good night or whatever. And as I say these words all the time, I get laughed at so much, it's embarrassing. Like, because I can't really pronounce everything the way Jürgen wants me to speak. But it took me almost a year to figure out that Jürgen is from Dornbirn and they speak another whole tongue of German. So everything that I say wrong to Jürgen is really wrong to Jürgen, but it's right to Mark. But Mark has been in Linz for 18 years and is married to an Austrian woman and speaks fluent Austrian, but he doesn't speak the same tongue as Jürgen. So this is a constant, like, the guys laugh at me, the coaches laugh at me, the GM laughs at me, the bus driver doesn't speak any English at all. He's been our bus driver for 12 years. He's seen plenty of North Americans. He laughs at my German because I always tell him, you know, Swansick or whatever. He's always yelling stuff to me and I'm saying stuff back to him. So it's probably the most difficult but yet funny situation I'm in every day.
As you like to conclude your locker room speeches with something in German, how about this interview?
Danke schön.
There you go. Thanks, coach.
You're welcome.